talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a part of dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fork that's key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fight beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com, where lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you, those of you who may be listening in the European heartland. Anyway, here's something interesting. It's breaking news from Freedom Daily, and it's headlined 63 shots shot in 24 hours as Trump prepares to address the nation in Arizona. He's heading to Phoenix, the mayor of Phoenix has asked him not to come. Kind of a strange request. The mayor, the chief of police has said that they'll be completely prepared for any potential problems. And of course, the anti-Trump people, the psychotic anti-fascists or anti-fa, plus Black Lives Matter and assorted rapscallions, promised to be out in force. So it should probably be a very interesting rally tonight. Any violence is too much violence, but it hits us especially hard when it happens to our friends and neighbors. We should be able to walk down our streets without fear of being sprayed with bullets. We should be able to, but there are cities in the United States where, that have made an environment so friendly to the lawless that we do have to fear these things. The residents in certain areas of these cities live in conditions little better than third world countries, and it's due primarily to the faulty leadership. One of those cities is under the tutelage of Rahm Emanuel. That's right, Obama's chief of staff there during his first administration, son of a Mossad agent, a far leftist, And he heads a city where there is very strict gun control, but there's gun battle like the Wild West. And it's racked with a crime rate that's increasing by the day. And the residents are especially horrified by what's happened there just days ago. The city, with Emmanuel at the helm, has been one of the loudest and proudest sanctuary cities. You know, that's for illegals. Meaning that illegals flock there with no intention of assimilation and no fear of deportation or criminal prosecution. The legal citizens have had just about enough, though, and the future of the out-of-control illegals and law-breaking leadership is in jeopardy now, and you know, long overdue. In a city where crime is as commonplace as traffic jams, breaking a crime record is something to be proud of. But Chicago did it. Chi-Town has just had its most violent weekend of the year to date. Those already in fear are looking to the president to make good on his promise to fix the crime problems that they face due to Emmanuel and others like him. And they're mourning the loss of those who were shot over the weekend. Obviously, the problem is increasing, and it's time for intervention. Under the watch of Obama's BFF, best friend, Rahm Emanuel, Chicago has descended into absolute chaos. 762 people were killed in Chicago last year. That's the highest homicide rate in 19 years. 762. Sadly, it hasn't gone much better this year. In fact, more people were shot over the last weekend than any other so far this year, except for the extended July 4th weekend. I shouldn't laugh, should I? I mean, it is shot. 8 killed. According to the Chicago Tribune, the devastation that has rocked the report on the devastation that's rocked the city. More people were shot in Chicago over the weekend than on any other weekend except for the 4th of July. At least 63 people were shot and 8 of them were killed, police said. More than half were wounded over 13 hours from Saturday to early Sunday. At least 16 were shot through the day Sunday, including 4 on Madison Avenue in South Austin. While the shootings occurred only across the city, 2 police districts bore the brunt, Calumet on the south with 12 shootings and Austin on the west with 11. The level of violence exceeded the 52 shot during the 3-day Memorial Day weekend, but it fell short of the 102 killed by gunfire on the 4th of July weekend, according to Tribune data. Despite the bad weekend, fewer people have been shot in Chicago this year than at this time last year, 2,435 this year compared to 2,710. That's shot. That's not those killed. There have been at least 451 homicides this year, 16 fewer than this time last year, statistics show. Anthony Guglielmi, chief spokesman for the Chicago Police Department, said Monday that Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, was frustrated by the violent weekend. "We are doing a very deep dive today. There's still a lot of work to be done on the victimology," he said. "The superintendent was frustrated this morning. Again, this represents the culture of Chicago. We can't arrest our way out of this when the criminal justice system in Chicago is not a deterrent." Well, that's just it, you know. The system isn't working. It isn't working. It's apparent that as long as there's no real punishment for these grievous offenses, you know, that's wounding at the very least, murder, the crimes won't stop. If behavior depends on its consequences, then the criminals, especially the illegals, need to experience the consequences that their victims are being experiencing. The loss of freedoms due to things beyond your control. There's no good excuse for the drug and gang-related violence. The only thing that we can do is wait and hope that the president and his administration can enforce the law enough to take both the criminals off the streets and send those who don't belong in America home. Here are more details about the shooting. 12 of the 63 people wounded on the weekend in Chicago were shot in the Calumet District on the city's far south side. That's mostly Negro area, interesting point. The district had only 7 people shot the entire month leading to this weekend. The shootings included one in which seven people were wounded when someone opened fire from a black SUV toward a crowd in a parking lot. A 33-year-old man died, and six others between the ages of 30 and 36 were wounded. So just promiscuously shooting up a parking lot. The attack around about 2:30 a.m. Sunday happened in the West Pullman neighborhood. Guglielmi said the deceased likely was the target of all the gunfire, and added that the man previously had been shot in 2009 and had been arrested 31 times. I mean, on some level, I guess I shouldn't laugh, but it is insane. Three people were shot near 101st Street and LaSalle in the Fernwood neighborhood Sunday night, where the police followed a blood trail and found a gun. A 16-year-old boy, 48-year-old man, 58-year-old man were wounded in an attack the police said stemmed from a fight at a house party. Oh, okay. Well, house party gets out of control and bang, 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 bang. Earlier in the week, weekend, two people were shot near 122nd and Green Streets. A man died of a head wound and a woman suffered leg wounds. Well, most of these are blacks. Most of this is black on black violence or illegals. And it comes down once again to the refusal to enforce the law. I mean, this is madness. Here's a very interesting piece I got. This is the playbook of the anti-fascists or the Antifa, who were the ones who attacked the white nationalists in Charlottesville 10 days ago. They attacked people in Boston on the weekend. They attacked Trump supporters and trashed parts of Seattle after Trump was elected. And this is a very interesting report by Prissy Hawley. And it explains about the terrorist tactics of the Antifa, and it exposes a document that was found recently, and it's a very, very interesting document. And this is some of their secrets come out of this training manual that a rioter accidentally dropped. As a former military officer who spent many long hours writing operations orders and sitting in on intelligence briefings, the one paramount goal before going into battle is knowing your enemy, knowing their tactics, their capabilities, and their mission before sending your troops into battle. It illustrates the old warning, knowing your enemy is half the battle. Now, thanks to a random discovery made on a college campus after an Antifa terrorist accidentally dropped his training manual, patriots across America now have access to their top secret tactics. And these communists are frantic to keep this information from spreading any further, as we now possess the necessary information to make our own battle plan. So here's some of what they learned. George Soros and Barack Obama are the ones behind the violent uprising we're now seeing popping up around the country. Antifa is Soros and Obama's pet project, as the pair are being behind the scenes secretly funding this violent anti-American, anti-free speech radical group. But unfortunately, for this set of crooked morons, we now have our hands on the very training manual that was created for these Antifa terrorists, and it's providing incredible insight into their tactics and their startling plan to destroy America at all costs. Antifa has borrowed many of Saul Alinsky's tactics for their training manual, and Saul Alinsky was a Jewish far-leftist political strategist. Barack Obama studied his tactics, as did Hillary Clinton, and he gave some very good, I won't say good in the sense of morally good, but shrewd tactics, outlines a very good shrewd tactics that's been widely and unfortunately successfully used in the past 40 years or so. He wrote a book called Rules for Radicals in the 1960s. One of their key strategies is demonizing the other side with outlandish false claims, as they believe that if a lie is repeated enough, it will eventually become the truth. That's why these idiots are constantly screaming that Trump is a fascist and Hitler, and why they constantly label Trump supporters as racists and homophobes. And you know how that happens, even in the mainstream press. Their ongoing hate campaign is an attempt to shut down their opposition, and their ultimate goal is the complete destruction of capitalism, patriotism, and Americanism, as they work toward establishing a one-world government order. In the introduction of these terrorist training manual, they make it clear from the beginning that they have no regard for free speech, and that's very important, and are willing to do whatever means necessary, including straight-out deceit, to achieve their goals for America. Demonizing the white race is paramount. The white males are their most fervently hated group of people in America. They believe every white male is as evil as Hitler. And here's some of the, I'm going to read from this manual. If you're reading this, it's because someone close to you, to our movement, trusted you with it. Please do not distribute it to anyone who may attempt to harm or denigrate what we are doing. This is an anti-fascist or anti-fa manual. If you are reading this, you already know that we are a social justice movement against hatred, intolerance, and bigotry. This manual outlines where we've been, where we're at, and where we're headed within the next 100 years. But first, to understand how we got here. For hundreds, if not thousands of years in the in this CIS, I think that's heterosexual, white male power structure controlled the media and disbursement of information. First came the printing press, controlled by white males. Then came mass media, such as newspapers and television, controlled by white males. But the next evolution of media was born at a time when the heterosexual white male power structure began to lose its firm grip on the dissemination of ideas. Some of our kind have begun to infiltrate high-level positions of power in major media organizations. Of course, it's obvious from the type of vile reporting. And of course, the new king of idea dissemination is social media. This is the new battleground for our war against fascism. That I'm reading from an anti-fa manual. Whites, especially especially heterosexual white males, have proven to be the greatest evil mankind has ever known. So white males are evil. From Hitler to our very own Harry S. Truman, who dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to the slave traders of old, no one has proven to do more harm to mankind than white men. Says this book document. From their murderous plundering of the Native Americans and African slave trade, white males have achieved status and power in the United States and Western Europe. Never indulge any fantasy by the fascists that white men have also cured diseases, lifted people out of poverty through Western capitalism, democracy, or any other facetious claim that they may make about such men. Their gains were only achieved through rape and plunders. Of course, it's a total lie. And the commentator says, the page of this manual hilariously teaches their members to use name-calling as a tactic for creating tolerance in America. When all else fails, compare someone to Hitler. They then discuss how to play the race card and use their minority status to gain the advantage. Remember, you're black first, American second, or gay lesbian first, and American third, and so on. And that's a quotation from what we'll read next. Hence, heterosexual white males have an inherent privilege in our society. This is the basis on which people of color, LGBTQ, that's lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual, and queer, and otherwise messed up, the disabled, and other groups that need protection, We'll level the playing field and form a new world order, that is a one-world government, a government by protected classes of people for protected classes of people for the protection and betterment of all humanity. under the headline Creating a Culture of Tolerance. To create a culture of tolerance, we must first eliminate all forms of hate speech. See, enemies of freedom. Every idea critical of our movement or our way of thinking must be condemned as racist, homophobic, and misogynistic. You know? Any idea, let's see, read that again. Any idea, every idea critical of our movement, that is this communist minority movement, every idea critical of that must be denounced as racist, homophobic, misogynistic, or whatever. We have the facts and history on our side. When all else fails, compare as someone to Hitler. Every once in a while, one of our minority group friends will become disillusioned and speak out as a conservative, also known as a fascist. Belittle them as delusional. They speak out against their own rational self-interest. Our color, my blackness, for example, comes first. It defines who I am. Black first, American second. Gay, lesbian first, little person, dwarf second. American third, and so on. Crashing the borders. Most liberals are not Antifa yet, but soon they will be. Refugee crises such as those created by the situation in Syria are the ideal way to get more people of color into America. They need our help. There are pictures of dead babies who have washed ashore onto beaches. Use imagery such as this to get support for expanding the people of color minority in the United States. Never call any immigrant illegal, obviously. They are undocumented. It doesn't matter whether they came over here to smuggle drugs or if they were here brought here by their parents at a young age. Migrants from Mexico and South America will play a crucial role in Antifa activities in the next 100 years. By 2017, 100 years from, sorry, by 2117, 100 years from now, our goal is to have 70% of the U.S. population to be non-white. By then, we will hopefully have subverted the power structure enough to eventuate our ends, or whatever that means, eventuate. Now, it's very interesting that they want, by 2017, to have 70% of the U.S. population non-white. Well, we know if something is not done immediately about the immigration invasion, it will be 50% non-white by 2041. So these are not by any means unrealistic goals. Evil, yes, but not unrealistic. And the commentator says, the next page offers insight into how they're using propaganda through the media to control Americans. Use social media as a baton to slap down anyone who holds fascist viewpoints. Call them racist, homophobic, misogynistic. Create an echo chamber around you. Here's a few of the quotations from the media section of the manual. It's important to gain control of the media through any means necessary. And that's why, of course, the alternative media is so important for us who are nationalists. It's important. Some major media conglomerates are swinging to our side, but they've not gone far enough. If you're seeking positions or power in the media, be sure to obfuscate and hide your true intentions on the various social media platforms. So again, it's by way of deception. Control the media, and this is what the Antifa document says. It's important to gain control of the media through any means necessary. In these early stages of this movement, it's important not to alienate any heterosexual white males who are on our side. Use white shame and white guilt to kowtow men in positions of power into following our ideals. Some major media conglomerates are swinging to our side, but they've not gone far enough. Of course, we see that all the time. Any problems around, it's white people's fault. We see that here in Canada. The endless efforts, and much of the media have bought into this, to make the backwardness and plight of the Native Indians as our fault. Playing on white guilt. We've been told for decades that the problems of the world are our doing. If a Native Indian is poor, well, we made him poor. If he's a drunk, a drug addict and beats his old lady to death, well, somehow, in ways not really explained, it's our fault. This is, of course, one of the things we have to fight back against most strenuously against this
cancerous white guilt. And the captured ARA document, I mean, Antifa document continues, social media is the new battleground of ideas, of ideals. We have seen what kind of power these outlets yield by kicking major fascists off their platforms before. This will and this must only continue. If you're seeking positions of power in the media, be sure to obfuscate and hide your true intentions on the various social media platforms. Better to remain a mystery and wield massive power than blatantly shouting your viewpoints from the hilltops. We have the objective truth on our side. Always project that. Use social media as a baton to slap down anyone who holds fascist viewpoints. That's anything you don't agree with. Call them racist, homophobic, misogynistic. Create an echo chamber around you. That's other people who say the same thing that you do. Many of us first learned about Antifa and gained our views on college campuses and universities across the country. This needs to start earlier. Take up teaching as a profession. Educate the youth about the dangers of fascism. Befriend those vulnerable students who you suspect of having fascist-leaning parents. Teach little Timmy not just how to read good, but also how to think and act good. Grammar is pathetic. It's probably just read well. Once we firmly have control of social media and most major media platforms, it's time to start Operation Truth. The way many social media platforms currently work is that people are primarily exposed to viewpoints they primarily already agree with. This creates a kind of echo chamber for that individual. However, once we control the flow of information, we can slowly start spreading the truth to the fascists who reject our ideology. This must be done very carefully. Slowly at first, begin suggesting a piece of news, video, tweet, or post that the opposition could conceivably believe in. Create new outlets of media that do not come with the baggage of known bias. Convert major media, news media stars into witting or unwitting pawns for our cause. After demonizing the other side and using the media, this is the commentary, to propagandize Americans, the next step for Antifa terrorists is to threaten the livelihood of anyone who dares speak out against their agenda. They teach their followers to literally destroy the lives of anyone who opposes them. We've already seen great efforts by the thought terrorists to find out who was at what patriots were at the protests in Charlottesville and go after them. Apparently one university student in Las Vegas, there were over 10,000 people who signed a petition that he'd be kicked off campus. And continue, believe what we do or you will be fired. The next crucial step is to threaten the livelihoods of anyone who dares speak out against our agenda. They are, after all, fascists, who are clearly racist, homophobic, or misogynistic. You can't run a company with someone like that in your midst. Once we achieve this end, we'll almost be able to taste our victory. Yet we have much further to go to achieve our ends. Fearing for one's livelihood is clearly a big motivator. Heterosexual white male fascists will begin to hide in the shadow. They may lurk online on message boards and underground media, but will be afraid to speak up using their own voice and name for fear of being labeled a bigot or for fear of being hurt financially. Many fascist corporate overlords still exist and will offer some of these hate mongers a place to work, but it is only a matter of time before our ranks infiltrate even the most evil of corporations who tolerate such hate speech from their employees. This is a anti-racist document, a guideline. The phase two is the socialization of capital. Never reveal our end game, but the obvious next step once we control the media is the socialization of capital. This will obviously require major political power, with hopefully 70% people of color in this nation by 2117, rather, we may begin to have a chance of at these ends. Obviously, we start with health care. It's, after all, a basic human right. Everyone knows someone who died of cancer or who got sick somehow. Obamacare was better than what we had before, but it was built with the healthcare lobbyists' consent. We need single payer, and we need it now. Americans have come to accept that it's okay for them to be locked in a cage rather than not pay their taxes. Never mind, most of the money collected goes to the military-industrial complex and to engage in imperialism wars abroad, wars against brown people and those who happen to live above rich oil land. So this is the anti-racist document. I'm going to come back to this right after a short musical interlude. It's an awful lot to have at one bite. And I'm going to play a few songs tonight. I hope you'll like. And this is a song by a guy who's a real patriot and who keeps threatening that he might run in for the Senate in Kentucky, and that's Hank Williams Jr., the son of the country and western great legend Hank Williams Sr. And this is If the South Would Have Won.
The day Elvis passed away would be our national holiday. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made. I'd make my Supreme Court down in Texas, and we wouldn't have no killers getting off free. If they were proven guilty, then they would swing quickly instead of writing books and smiling on TV. President of the Southern States. The day young Skinner died, we'd show our Southern pride. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made.
For the Dixieland boys.
Oh, yeah. I'd have all the whiskey made in Tennessee, and all the horses raised in those Kentucky hills. The national treasury would be in Tupelo, Mississippi, and I'd put Hank Williams' picture on $100 bills. I'd have all the cars made in the Carolinas, and I'd ban all the ones made in China. I'd have every girl child sent to Georgia to learn to smile and talk with that Southern accent. It drives me wild.
That's Hank Williams Jr. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made. Great song by Hank Jr. Here's a song by Alabama. And this is called Mountain Music. Hope you like it.
You see that mountain over there? Yeah, what do
these days, I'm a clown.
That's all about Alabama with Mountain Music. Great song there. Hope you like it. And I'll play one more tune here on our musical interlude tonight. This is Paul from, well, the long play. And this is for our musical interlude. Let's see. Why don't we play? This is a great one. I think you'll like, and kind of I think very upbeat and kind of plays to the heart. It's John Denver, "Take Me Home, Country Road."
We're all made by old friends that got the bed, and there's a fight. We got rules and they don't change. It's in our blood, it's in our
West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is older, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia. Drop in my eye, country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, Mountain Mama, take me home, country roads. I hear her voice in the morning. The radio reminds me of my home far away. Driving down the road, I get a feeling that I should have been home yesterday. Yesterday, country road.
Denver, take me home, country roads. This is Paul Prom, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I was reading a document that's been found on a college campus recently, and it's a training manual for the Antifa or the anti-fascists, showing their long-range goals and. The methodology seems largely based on writing by Saul Alinsky, who was the quarterback of the radical movement that came out of the 1960s. He wrote a book called Rules for Radicals. Section goes into the socialization of capital. Which means basically government run economy. And the commentary says that an entire section is dedicated to being pro-abortion, where these terrorists talk about how white people can afford to have their fetuses aborted while people of color must be forced to keep their fetuses to term. So it's not really even about choice. As people of color, LGBTQ, little people, the disabled, Muslims, and other minority classes slowly become the majority, we will naturally vote pro-Antifa politicians into office. It is, after all, only in our best interest. After healthcare, the next target for socialization will obviously be the media. Use one of the government's only tools against big corporations, antitrust, anti-monopoly laws, to split the media into worker-owned, anti-fa-controlled entities. Currently, only the rich and upper middle class get to enjoy the benefits of Wall Street and all that it has to offer. If the workers owned and controlled their own businesses, everyone would win, except the big fat cat CEOs who would be out of a job. We will have to gradually raise the tax rates on both the 1% as well as on the mid to upper middle class to achieve our ends. Raise the minimum wage to a livable wage, especially in places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. Build homes for the homeless and confiscate foreclosed properties from banks to give to the homeless. After media, banks, and finance will be our next target, followed by technology and manufacturing. So essentially a communist takeover of the economy. One thing we must be sure to do is to never let the white man excuse himself of his obligations to us by taking so-called reparations. That time has surely passed, and would give the heterosexual white male power structure an excuse to stop caving into our demands. Oh, we gave Jamal $100,000 in reparations 2 years ago. Well, we don't need to help him now that he's a penniless crack addict on the street now, they will surely say. It's kind of unusual thought. Speeding up progress. This is the Antifa blueprint or document. To achieve these ends, there are some tactics that we must use to speed our way toward program. It's well known that whites in America are not producing as many offspring as their counterparts. It's important to make abortion on demand and without apology, overwhelmingly available to the predominantly white communities. We must lower the bar to access birth control in these communities and use media to promulgate the image of childless white couples as being very sexy, hip, and cool. Meanwhile, the fascists on the right will continue to attempt to restrict access to abortion on demand. Middle-class whites tend to have the ability to pay, even for out-of-state state travel, to get their fetuses aborted. Currently, the predominantly people of color-dominated poor communities have little choice but to keep a baby to term, even if sent into the foster system. These children will one day lay the groundwork for our eventual new world order and one world government. You see, this is a colored uprising, essentially. And finally, the terrorists, and this is part of the commentary, finally, the terrorists lay out their ultimate goal, which is the new world order and new world government. And they will use violence, hatred, and whatever means necessary, is a phrase they keep repeating, to completely destroy the opponent, that is, Americans. The New World Order, and that's phase three. Imagine a world free of hatred and bigotry. Imagine a world where you'll never have to be called the N-word again. Imagine a world where you can be as gay as you want and not be called a raging obscenity, okay? Where Antifa ideas reign supreme and all hateful microaggressive speech is eradicated. It means made illegal. Anyway, the pipe dreams about the New World Order continue. Don't forget, just because these may be unrealistic doesn't mean they can't happen. One way to accomplish this, says this document, will be to tag or microchip every human being on the planet, and they will do so voluntarily. Use the guise of entertainment and other benefits to lure the people to this end. This chip, embedded in the hand or neck, will allow Antifa-approved regulators to monitor the citizenry of the world. Information accessible by waving a wand a few feet away from the chip would be DNA content, including percentage of color, genetic disadvantages, etc., political leanings scored by past social media posts, earnings, known associates, Antifa status, etc. We must ensure that only Antifa-approved regulators can access this data, lest we veer too far into fascism ourselves. This is a dream. Of course, this is the total control that they believe in. Thus, with the wave of a wand, one would be able to tell whether that vaguely beige-ish looking person is allowed to use the term nigga. For example, in rap lexicon, it's popular to say where my niggas are at. I got hoes in different area codes. While clearly misogynistic, a person of color has the right to use the term nigga. Antifa regulators will have to determine an acceptable percentage threshold of color in one's DNA that makes it acceptable to use the term nigger. If you're only 17% of African descent, perhaps it's not okay to use the term. Clearly, if you're 1% or less African descent, it's problematic, although some dark Asians can get away with saying it just because of how dark their skin is. However, if someone, say, 80% Caucasian descent attempts to use the N-word with the hard R, they will clearly be in violation of hate crime speech. While prison would clearly be too harsh of a punishment for such an individual, demotion of status, power, and income would not be out of the question and should be on the norm. Now, excuse me. And this is still being taken from a document captured by captured from an Antifa on campus just recently. Anyway, it continues, and this, you know, a lot of this may seem dreamy stuff, but this is what these people are indoctrinated with. This is what they are being brought to believe that they're fighting about. And as we continue in this document, which is getting to a close, the issue of using force to achieve our ends is a tricky one. Always shout down fascist opponents, disrupt their speeches, counter-rally their rallies. Force the media to show our side as the righteous one that it is. When it comes to the issue of terror, we do not condone mass murder. Oh, well, that's really great of them. However, a tiny majority of people who happen to be Muslim have decided to blow themselves up for their cause. Clearly, this is the result of hundreds of years of Western intervention by heterosexual white males on their culture. Well, this is not true. Osama bin Laden would not have attacked the World Trade Center and Pentagon had we not dropped an atomic bomb on Japan in World War II, for example. He didn't care. He didn't care about Japan one little bit. One world government. Our movement will eventually spread to other nations. Indeed, it has already begun. Some peoples will prove excessively resistant to our brand of anti-Antifa or anti-fascism, such as those who were previously burned by communism or failed socialist states. Make no mistake, we will prevail where others have failed. Their leaders lust for status, power, and wealth. Eventually, their leaders lust for status, power, and wealth. Eventually, led them to create layers of power full of corrupt state officials. Antifa will have the power of the people on our side, or we will eventually, and we will not succumb to such a fate. Well, that's human nature. They do. It's only natural that the ideologies we espouse spread throughout the globe. Starving Africans will finally be lifted out of poverty when we redistribute wealth of the Western 1% to them and to our brothers and sisters here at home. Yes, and in one generation after that, they'll be back to grinding poverty. and that is an absolutely foregone conclusion. Absolutely, what we found for foreign aid. Containership after containership will be converted to massive passenger cruise lines that will ferry poverty-stricken brown people from around the world to the former United States and Western Europe. Jobs will flower aplenty at all the world's factory-owned businesses. Those who can't work will be provided a stipend, an unlimited supply of opiates, marijuana, meth and cocaine to occupy their free time. And the document concludes, sounds too good to be true? It isn't. This is what we're fighting for. This is what we believe. We are Antifa. Either you are with us or you're a fascist. It's a scary document, and it rather carefully summarizes both what they want to do and the ways that they intend to get there. Here's an interesting article by Lyle Shelton, and it's about an issue that we face here in North America, and it's the issue of the so-called same-sex marriage. Why you'll not be free under same-sex marriage law. There's a school of thought in the debate about redefining marriage that it is inevitable and that Christians should just sue for peace with the same-sex marriage activists. Try and extract as many protections for religious freedom as possible and roll over. To make it easier for you to address to capitulate, leading politicians such as Australian opposition leader Bill Shorten, Attorney General George Brandis, and Tim Wilson say same-sex marriage and freedom of religion can coexist. Oh, really? I don't accept that the religious practice in this country is under threat, Mr. Shorten said. What he is essentially saying is it's okay to go to church and believe what you like. But what is under threat, and what Mr. Shorten is not telling us, is a religious practice outside the church, mosque, or synagogue is under threat. Should the definition of marriage in law be changed? Indeed. It is now Labour policy to use the law to punish anyone, that's Labour Party, who does not conform to the same-sex marriage ideology, unless they are professional clergy. This change occurred in the Australian Labour Party conference in Melbourne in August of 2015. Everything from finding the wedding service provider who declines to participate in a same-sex wedding to funding radical LGBTQ sex education programs in schools such as Safe Schools. Yeah, the attack is ongoing. I'll be coming back to that at another broadcast. Well, this is Paul Frum, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show's repeated in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as always, do with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.